Okay, we're on Shmuel Alf Perk Yud Zayin Pasuk Chav Hey, and David HaMelech has now come to the battlefield, and he hears Goliath repeating the blasphemous words that he says, and everyone, and he gets a little bit more, takes more of the initiative, and is almost ready to attack the Jews, and they all run away. So we're in Pasuk Chav Hey. And from what you see in this pasuk, it kind of lets you know what was going on a little bit before. So we'll do the next three psukim now. Vayomer Ish Yisrael, and all the Jewish people said, Hari Isem Ha'ish Ha'ela Hazeh, have you seen this man who's coming up? Ki L'choreif Es Yisrael Oile, he's coming up to curse the Jews. V'ha'ya Ha'ish Asher Yakenu, and the person who will kill him, Ya'ashrenu HaMelech, Osher Godol, the king will make him very wealthy. He'll give him a lot of money. Vesbito Yitein Lo, and he'll give him his daughter to marry. Vesbeis Aviv Yasechov Shem Yisrael, and he'll make his father's family free from the Jews, like free to pay, from paying taxes, free from military duty, etc., etc. So it seems that Shaul HaMelech already offered this reward for anybody who would do battle with Goliath and defeat Goliath. And that's what just kind of gets now repeated. But what's more important in terms of the context, this is the first time David HaMelech is hearing this. David HaMelech just came. So that's why they have to, that's why they bring this idea now, as opposed to they could have mentioned it earlier, because now David HaMelech hears this. And now he reacts to that in Pasuk Chavav. Vayomer David el anashima omdi mimole mor. And David says to the people who are standing with him, saying, What are they going to do to the person who kills this plishti? Veisir cher pomeal Yisrael, and thereby removing the shame and disgrace from the Jewish people. Kimia plishti arel hazeh, ki cheref marchos. Elohim Chaim. Who is this uncircumcised plishti who has cursed the soldiers, God's the soldiers of the living God? So Chavzayin Vayomer La'am Kadaver Zelimor. The people answered him as they said, Kol Yehaseli Shasher Yekenu. So will be done to the man who kills him. In other words, they just kind of repeated what was said. So it's a very, the psukim are very difficult because obviously, I mean, he said, how are you going to learn the psukim? If David heard what was going on, so why did he ask again what's going on over here? So none of the commentaries mentioned. You might think, well, maybe he didn't hear it when they were saying it the first time. So, but that's kind of odd because why would he even ask? What are they going to do to the guy who kills him? So, therefore, the commentaries offer the following insights. And also, another question is, why would Shaul offer his daughter's hand in marriage to this guy? Who knows what kind of guy this is? It's almost similar to Yiftach's vow. He said, when I come back from battle, first thing I see, I will give to Hashem. So, well, whoever defeats this guy in battle, I'll give my daughter him. What if it's Hulk Hogan who defeats him in battle? I mean, you need a strong guy. Not necessarily every strong guy is going to be the kind of person you want your daughter to marry. So the Ralbag answers that question. And the Ralbag says, well, he knew about Shmuel's prophecy that he would lose the kingdom. So he figures, you know what? If this anybody who can kill Goliath will probably be able to protect me that I don't lose my kingdom so quickly. So there could have been some self-serving reasons over here. That's what Ralbag suggests. So this David discusses what's the back and forth over here. So he just says he wanted to get people to start talking to him. And by talking to him, then he could say that he's going to go. There's he's going to go, but he wants to just hear, you know, sometimes to initiate a conversation, just like Hashem went to Adam and went to others when they did an Avera. And Hashem says, oh, where's your brother? So what are you asking where your brother for? You know, he has to just begin and initiate the conversation. Shlomo HaMelech is trying to initiate the conversation with them to have the context from which he will be happy to volunteer for this job. While the Malbim gives a deeper interpretation. And he says like this, David is saying it as a question. He's saying, "My Yasalisha Shayakis Aplishtia laws? What is going to happen? What's going to be the reward for the guy who kills this Plishti?" The guy already has the greatest reward imaginable. By killing him, he has removed the shame from the Jewish people. Can there be a greater reward than being the person who does the most amazing Kiddush Hashem to slay a blasphemer of Hashem that everybody's afraid of? And you're talking about a reward? What are you giving a reward for such a guy? The greatest reward is that he was the vehicle of a Kiddush Hashem. So for that you get a reward? That's what he's saying. And because who is this Plishti? Right? So anyone who is jealous for Hashem, he will do it for Hashem, and the revenge is for Hashem. You're doing it for Hashem, aren't you? You're not doing it for anything else. There's a lot deeper understanding here. Can you imagine? You want to defeat Goliath, right? Now, clearly, Goliath is stronger than anybody. So what might you need in order to defeat Goliath? You might need, like, God's help. Wouldn't you say you need God's help? Is anybody going to take on Goliath? I mean, Goliath's a big, strong guy, right? He's 9 feet tall, right? He's big, man. He's got armor that more than people can carry. You think you're going to beat Goliath with your own human strength? You're going to put So obviously you need Hashem's help. You need Hashem's help. So now you're doing it shalol lishma. You're doing it for self-serving reasons. How's Hashem going to help you in doing things for self-serving reasons? You only can be victorious if you're doing it l'shem shemai. Right? Mom doesn't say this, but that's obvious. So, of course, the fact that you get to do a Kiddush Hashem, that's it. That's what it's all about. It's not about that. So they then respond. So the Malbim is learning. It's David was saying, not asking what's the reward. He's saying, what kind of business is this that you're going to reward the guy? He never had to ask what's the reward. He knew what the reward was. He said, what kind of business is it to ask to give such a reward? Doesn't make any sense. So then they respond, and Chavzayin says, you're right. You're right. If we look at the ultimate good, nobody should get a reward for this. People should do it for the honor of Hashem. But that which says that the one who kills him gets the daughter, it's not a reward. It's not an ultimate reward of why you're doing it. But it's rather for the fellow who is able to show such courage and such strength without worrying what's going to happen to him. Obviously, the king now would know who to make for shidduch for his daughter. It's not as the goal. It's anybody who can do this, and it's a vehicle of Kiddush Hashem. Now, it's obvious the king hasn't married off his daughter yet. He wants to marry his daughter to the most spiritual person around. That will be the way of us knowing who the most spiritual person is he'll take the king's daughter. That's the king, who the king would want. But you're right. He won't be doing it for that reason. But that will be an added bonus, as it were. The king will know who to marry off his daughter to. There is a much deeper pshat that Eliyahu Kitov talks about, but we're not ready for it yet because we have to learn a little bit more, and we'll see if we have time for it. He has a whole very large but very beautiful treatment of the subject of David HaMelech, and specifically as it relates to the last parak and this parak. So we'll have to leave it, though. We'd first have to learn everything and then find time to go through it. It's pages and pages and pages, but it's outstanding. So we'll have to see. But there is more to this. Okay, Pasuk Chav Ches. And this is a very difficult Pasuk as well. Vayishma Eliyav Achiv HaGadol B'Dabro Anashim. So Eliyav, David's eldest brother, he hears David's talking to his brothers. So this is a very odd Pasuk. Vayicharaf Eliyav B'David. Eliyav gets angry at David, and this is the anger that Hashem saw in Eliyav that said that he can't be the leader, he can't be the king, because I know he's got a temper, and this is where it comes out. But as we said, thank God it only came out in just an insult, but it didn't come out in worse. But this is the anger. Vayomri says, Loma se yaradito, why did you go down? What are you doing over here? And who did you leave the few sheep that we still have left in the desert? Like, who gave you permission to do this? You're being very irresponsible. Now you appreciate the Malbim we learned yesterday. that said he got up early in the morning, he made sure to have someone to protect. It was his father who told him. David did everything in the most beautiful way. And of course, the brother doesn't know that. And obviously, Eliyahu, for some reason, chooses to judge David HaMelech not favorably. Okay. He goes on. Ani yodati es zedoncha. I know your maliciousness. Ves roa levavcha and your evil heart. Kilman rose hamuchami radata. Because you were curious to see what's going on in the battlefield. You were one of the rubberneckers. You know, one of the people who likes to get their curiosity satisfied. That's what you came. You're leaving Abba's stuff. No one's going to watch it. And you're reckless. Whoa. So there's a lot of questions on this. But the Malbim doesn't say much more than what I've already explained. But he suspected him that he went without his father's permission, A. B, and he left the sheep in danger. And that's what he's repeating and says, I know your maliciousness. That's going without asking father. And I know your evil heart. It's leaving the sheep unprotected. So, you know, this is as if to say, I know what kind of guy you are already. As if to say, David's done a lot of things like this already to make it. Now, Eliyahu isn't an idiot. He's not a Russia. And he is a tzaddik with a flaw, okay. But it's like he's saying, you know, I know what kind of guy you are, David. What do you mean you know what kind of guy he is? What kind of guy is he? He's such a bad guy. So that's a difficult question that Kitov answers. But again, we'll have to wait. But another question that can be asked is, why is he asking the question now? I mean, David HaMelech already came in Pasuk Chaf Beis. So, okay, you could say a simple answer is the first time Eliyahu saw him. But I don't know about that, because it seems only after David HaMelech asks what's going to happen to the person who kills the giant, what will happen, what kind of reward he'll get. So perhaps he's thinking, oh, you're looking for this reward. Okay, it's difficult. It's a very difficult pasuk that right now we're not going to answer. But we'll give one answer though. But it's, you know, you could say simple jealousy. But again, it's all difficult to understand. Doesn't Eliyahu know that David's been anointed? Does he know he's been anointed? Eliyahu knows he's been anointed. He's been anointed by Shmuel HaMelech. But this is, you're jealous. I understand you're jealous. But you're a tzaddik, aren't you? If you're a tzaddik, then Hashem anointed David as the king. So get over it, man.
When he anointed him, we said that there were two opinions. That one was that it was in front of the brothers.
Okay. You'd have to say it goes like that. Okay, if that's all you have to say, it's like that. Again, it's difficult to understand. So we'll give one shot that at least will let us sleep tonight.
Wasn't he taking food for his brother? So wouldn't he have seen that his father gave him food to take to him?
Yeah, that's another question. Well, I guess he didn't see the food yet.
Well, you didn't give it to him. Why wouldn't he say it?
Well, let's put it. Okay, so it's 2 points. Remember David HaMelech, he left the food with the guy in charge of who's watching the stuff. It says he didn't carry it with him down to the battlefield. He left it at the perimeter of the field. Remember, it says he left the stuff.
Oh, okay.
So all he sees is David. He doesn't see the food. He may see him laden down with cheeses and this and that and money and this, right? So the answer is, well, maybe let's do one more pasuk first to make it even more difficult to understand. Okay, we'll do one more to make it more difficult to understand. What's David's answer? Wait, now before we go to the next pasuk, what do you think David's answer should have been? What do you mean? Abba told me to bring the food. End of the discussion. That's not what David HaMelech says. Vayomer David says, Me'o sisi ota. Now what have I done? Hello, Dovero. All I did was say a few words. Now, that extra word, ota, is a very telling word. He doesn't say, what have I done? He said, what have I done this time? Which would seem to indicate what? Right? So Metzudas David says, you know, you always get angry at me, right? It seems that I never can do any right with you. This is probably not the first time Eliyahu got angry at him. He says, no, I didn't do anything this time. All I did was say a few words. Mitzvah Zavah say, you know, I know you always blame me for things. This is a standard thing you have between me and you, right? You always blame me for this, you always blame me for that. And it seems as if it's saying, and maybe you're right in the past. But now, what did I do now? All I did was speak. I didn't do anything more than that. So this is a pasuk that obviously is telling there's a lot more to the story than what the reader sees. So we'll have to kind of leave that, unfortunately, for now. Because again, Kitov deals with all this. He deals with all this. But it's very odd psukim. It's very odd psukim. Yeah.
So, but either Eliyahu has wrongly accused him of doing things in the past, or David has actually done things in the past that were legitimate, an issue.
So based on the information you know now, it's reasonable for you to offer those two suggestions. That's why if we go through Reb Kitov's stuff, you'll say, wow, there was a third possibility that I could never have imagined. that's, you're right, that the reader,
I'm saying,
well, I have to wait till Goyas gets killed. You can't, because there's more, I don't want to just do bits and pieces. It's a whole thing over here. But anyway, it's a difficult puzzle. So, the Radak says, on the, explaining one of the words over here, where he says, "I know you're niadati es zedoncha. I know you're zedoncha." So we said from the word zodom, maliciousness. So Radak explains it's a lashon of hefker. Hefker here meaning usually hefker means ownerless, but there's another way of applying the word hefker. I mean, a guy could say, "I make it hefker. I don't own it." There's two things you cannot own in life. You cannot own your possessions. You cannot own your self-control. In other words, what if evil Knievel, wouldn't you say he's the kind of guy that made his life hefker? In other words, if a guy's a daredevil, right, how much does he care about his life? You know what I'm saying? It's like yush midas. Right? And like, he will now attempt to take his motorcycle over the 20-foot span between this mountain and this mountain with nothing in between. He's going to go, right? Now, the question is, well, I guess he's given up on his life because nobody who cares about living would attempt daredevil feats, right? So just like we say, if you give up hope on an object, you say, now Chazal say it's hefker, or you can say, I say it's hefker. I don't care to go back for it. It's not worth me going back for this wheat in the granary, so I make it hefker. Sometimes people treat their own lives as if it's hefker. And that's how the Radak learns, I know you're hefkerus. I know your recklessness. Being reckless. Is that correct? You want to say, you just jump in the street. You don't even look both ways. Maybe look both ways before you cross it. You're a reckless guy. You just do things without impetuous recklessness. So that's what seems from the Radak. So the Musar Hanavim, In footnote Yud Beis explains, he's saying very simple. He's saying, listen, everybody else has got brains. Goliath is threatening to take on anybody, one guy. Everybody with a brain knows you don't take on this guy. Nobody can take on this guy. Finished. And what were the Jews hoping? Jews were hoping that the Plishtim en masse would fight. When you're fighting en masse, then you have a chance. You got hundreds of thousands here, hundreds of thousands there. You know, 50 guys take down Goliath, and you send 150 guys, 10,000 guys to get Goliath. You get him down, right? And then there's the rest of the battle. When there's a battle, all kinds of things happen, and you know, you could win. That's the only way they could win. They couldn't win taking on Goliath. So obviously, what's Shaul's strategy? We're going to wait till the Plishtim get angry enough. They'll all come, and we'll hope that, or maybe Yonasan will do another surprise sneak attack in the middle of the night, whatever. Catch him off guard, but we cannot take this guy on one-on-one. Obviously, as 40 days went by, Shaul is not stupid. He might be afraid, but he's not stupid. If he felt there was someone who could take him on, obviously the strategy is not to fight him. So he's saying, so what he wanted to do, he said, listen, we know what kind of reckless guy you are. Is that reckless you are? You just left out, you just ran here like nothing. You left all the sheep behind. You're just impetuous. Oh, I gotta go. So now, what he wanted to do, he's trying to dissuade him from fighting Goliath. He's trying to take his spirit away. He says, you're gonna take him on. This is all part of your reckless spirit. So now this is so the Musa Nevi'im explains this is a very important idea over here. He says a person who is able, who wants, is willing to give up his life for Hashem. L'chayra, that's a very holy thing, right? Wait a minute, it's Kiddush Hashem. Isn't there a mitzvah to give up your life for Hashem? So what's wrong? What's bothering Aliyah? She says that's only a person. Listen, this is a beautiful insight. Kiddush Hashem is one. This is the difference. Famous question. Why do we admire the Jewish people who are willing to die out Kiddush Hashem? How are we better than an Arab terrorist who's also, from his mindset, is willing to die out Kiddush Hashem? So how are we any better than the Arab terrorists? Matter of fact, they're better. They give up their lives more than we do. That's what a person might ask. Okay, so one answer is, you know, I give up my life, but I don't kill others with me. that's a pretty good answer. But there's a better answer. The better answer is that giving up your life, Al Kiddush Hashem, is only valuable is if you first value your life. Because then you're giving something up. If you don't value your life, then what have you given away? If you have a miserable life, let's say you're born with a chronic disease that's so debilitating, every moment of your life is pain. And you got a wife who's a witch, let's say, you have a terrible marriage, right? You got a terrible job, and you're not making any money, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And low self-esteem. You don't have any friends. And you also look ugly. Like, let's just put it all together, right? Okay, so you know what? What do I got to lose? You know, they tell me after I die, I've 99 virgins to be with me. It's going to be a lot better than that. So, Adarabba, it's not L'shem Shemayim. It's not for the sake of heaven. It's for your own sake. Because anything, that's the whole, you know, in India, the caste system, why do they respect the lowest caste? Why do they respect the other caste? Because they have a Masoira that, you know, if you're good in this world, then the next time you come back, you'll be in a bigger caste. You'll be a better caste. So it's not that they like anybody. That's the only way out. So if a guy doesn't have anything in his life, so he'll give up his life. It's a big deal, but what's it worth? They're not a rubber. It's nothing. Somebody who really values his life and is willing to give up his life, that means you thought it through, you understand that Hashem is really what's more important. As much as I love my wife and I love my kids and I love my life and I'm a very prestigious person in the community, I'm willing to give that all up for the honor of Hashem. Now that's a Kiddush Hashem, right? So, but somebody who's an impetuous guy, who's a daredevil, who doesn't even consider his own life, if he gives up his life, that's not a merit. Again, you need a merit over here. The guy who's going to beat Goliath needs a merit. Right? And that's what David was saying. That's what David was saying to the other people. He's saying, what do you mean to get a reward? You got to do it on your own because you want to do it for Hashem. Eliyahu obviously, according to the Malbim, didn't hear that discussion that David had. He just hears that David's interested. So what Eliyahu is saying, you know, if someone's going to win, it has to be Mamash L'shem Shemayim. You're not L'shem Shemayim. You don't care about your life anyway. So that's what Aliyev is saying, that you think you're going to win, you're not going to win, because Hashem is not going to look at your giving up your life as anything valuable, because you're reckless your whole life. Okay, so again, we have to know where does he get that idea from, but still, that's what he's feeling over here. And so only if you're if you really thought it through, would it be worth something? So with this, he explains very nicely. He says, why do you think Yitzchak wanted to give Esav a blessing before he died? Right? But rather, and Rivka instead wanted Yaakov to get blessed. So he says, the Yalkut Ruveni says in Parshas Vayeshev that Esav's level of honoring his father was so amazing that he would go into dangerous places for his father. I guess if he had to hunt food, He would risk his life to go hunt the food for his father. That's how much to do kibbutz avim. He would risk his life. And why is it, what's that doing in Parshas Vayeshev? Because when Yaakov told Yosef to go see how the brothers were doing, and Yosef knew that was a very dangerous thing to do because he knew his brothers hated him, and to go alone out to them is very dangerous. But he said, listen, he made a kal v'chomer. Esav harasha was willing to risk his life to do kibbutz avim. Shouldn't I be willing to risk my life to do kibbutz avim? So you see that Esav had unbelievable Mesiris Nefesh, self-sacrifice for his father. So Yitzchak saw that in Esav, that Esav's willing to be Moser Nefesh for the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim. So you know, there is some good to this fellow. I understand he's got a lot of challenges. He's got a lot of challenges. But remember, Yitzchak's saying, but he does do Mesiris Nefesh for mitzvahs. So, and someone who's going to get the blessings from me is someone who's going to have a lot of Mesiris Nefesh. The barakas won't work unless you're the kind of person who's going to be self-sacrificing. So he figured that's why he's deservant of it. But Rivka, on the other hand, she understood the true reality of Esav. It's not because he valued his life and valued the miss of honoring his father more than he valued his life. It's because Esav didn't value his life. His life was hefker. You know, especially after you heard that Avram Avinu died, the Medrash says, if Avram Avinu died, there's no judge, there's no fairness, there's no nothing, there can't be a real God, and this, that. So I don't care about life. Gives up on life. He gives up on life. So the fact that he's Moser Nefesh, you know, it's not for Torah and Mitzvahs. It's because he doesn't care about his life anyway. It's another thrill. So he'll do other things for thrills that aren't in line with Torah as well. And therefore, she had Yaakov do the real Mesiris Nefesh. Yaakov was real Mesiris Nefesh. Yaakov said, I don't want to do this. I like learning Torah. Don't bother me. I don't want to do things that look crooked and underhanded. I'm not interested in doing this. And I know what's going to happen. My father will curse me. Well, I don't want to get cursed. And I'm not interested in any brachas. Ah, that's real Mesiris Nefesh. You value what your life. You value your good standing. And your mother is saying, risk your good standing. That's real Mesiris Nefesh. That's what Yitzchak was hoping Esav had, which Rivka said he didn't have. So there's a difference between self-sacrifice and recklessness. And that's what Eliyahu is saying to David, you're a reckless fellow. So there's a fine line. And you know what? Only people who don't know, so who, what will answer, how will we have the answer? So what is, when is it reckless and when is it not? You only know about what's in the person's heart. You have to know, does the person value his life or not? And the only person who really can answer that person is the person himself, if he's not biased. Person says, you know, I really do not want to die. I really would like to be on this planet a lot longer. But if this is what Hashem wants, then I have to give up. I have to give up for Hashem. Like I said, my life stinks anyway, so what's the difference? So what did you give to Hashem? Adarab, Hashem bailed you out. He bailed you out. Now your meaningless life, you dial Kiddush Hashem and everything's wonderful. Right? So that's the difference between the Arab terrorist and the Jew. The Jew goes out to battle, goes out in the Tzahal. You know what? 99.9% of all nice Jewish boys and girls, they value their lives. And the last thing they want to do is have to kill an Arab. The last thing they want to do is kill an Arab. The last thing they want to do is give up their life. But you have to give up for your country. You have to, because there's millions of Jews that need to be protected. You have to protect them, even though it means I may die. The Arab, I have no life anyway. I have my life anyway. They live in squalor. And the parents are going to get $10,000 if the kid dies, right? And they promise him, yes, you're going to get the next one. Yes, we live in squalor. They intentionally keep them in squalor. If all the Arabs had a good lifestyle, I think they would want to fight. If you keep, that's the whole mentality of the PLO. Keep them in this terrible condition. Because that's the only way we can get them to do crazy things against the Jews. You see how much the PLO hates their own people. They hate their own people to use them as tools. And all the liberal-minded idiots in the world don't see this. They're mamish idiots. You can't see such a thing. Where did Arafat's billions of dollars go? And Canada was part of all that. You know, if you want to get a loan from the bank, a measly $100,000 loan for the bank on a house that's worth $800,000, you know how many papers you got to fill out? You say, listen, look at the house. It's mine, clean, right? What do you got to bet? With this and this and this, and give us your last 25 years of statements of this and that. And the PLO says, we want 10 of this. Here. Shugaz, that's when you had this liberal government. Meat of chesed, uncontrolled chesed, right? The world doesn't see this. And when the Israelis kill one Arab, you know how much cheshbon they make before they kill an Arab? And just to criticize the Jews, and it's unbelievable. It's obviously the Yad Hashem to make these people crazy, right? But that's the same thing over here.
Just for an example, a while ago, the Israelis caught this Palestinian woman, the terrorist. They caught her, but she she had disfigured her face in an explosion, a gas explosion. So they purposely told her she had no life, she should never get married, never yet. So that's how they recruit.
That's right. That's all there is to it. But it's more than that. They make them have that life. They intentionally are, because that's they're creating the best people who don't care about their lives. The best fighter is the guy who knows he's got nothing to lose. You know, that's why, you know, you have this whole idea of, you know, upsets in the last 2 days of the season where you got this team that needs to win one more game to get in and the other team who's far, they're never going to get in. So that team who's never getting in says, what do we got to lose? We can throw everything we have these days. We can get injured. We can do whatever we want. But we know we're not going to the playoffs. We got nothing to lose. We're already out. The other team, no, we still have to know. If we win, then we have to be healthy enough to play the first round. It's a whole cheshbon. You have a whole life. You can't be reckless. Can't be reckless. Other guys, why not? What do we care? It'd be the greatest thing to slap him in the face, even if, you know, we'll risk it. Well, we got to lose anyway. If we lose, we already lost. That's the guy who has no life, he's already lost. If he's abandoned hope of his own life, so you're a reckless guy. But Kiddush Hashem, it certainly isn't. Right?
Rabbi,
yeah.
Why are we taking Eliab's words at face value, like without knowing the context and the history and the relationship with David?
Oh, so that's what Kitov's gonna do. I know, I'm going to say, but it's a problem. I'm saying, but therefore the words are very hard to understand. That's what I'm saying. If you're looking at the words, and even the basic commentaries aren't lending us, as much depth as we want to know here. Now there's one other thing he says, so this commentary of the Musa Navim, he takes the side that Eliyahu did know that David is going to be the king. So he asks, if he knows that David is supposed to be the king, what's he dissuading him for? According to this opinion, that said he knew that David was anointed. So what are you dissuading for? Obviously, this is the moment in history that he's been designated for. So the answer is, he felt, yes, he's anointed, but only to be king after Shaul dies. Because there is a rule that one king doesn't become, a king doesn't become a king until the other king's time is finished. So he's figuring, listen, Shaul Melech is still the guy out on the battlefield. He's the leader. It's not your time. Your time will come. When Shaul dies, we need a new king. You're going to be the new king. That's what he felt. So that's why he was dissuading him. Still doesn't explain other things, but at least explains why he was dissuading him. All right, let's move on now to Pasuk Chavtes. Okay, I did Chavtes, rather Lamed. Pasuk Lamed. Vayisov me'etzlo el mulacher. David turns away from Eliyahu and whoever the crowd of people was over here. He goes to another corner of the, where the soldiers are hanging out. Goes to another barracks. Vayomer k'davar aseh. And he asks the same question. What's gonna happen to the guy who kills Goliath? And everybody told him the same answers he heard before. Again, you have to understand why is David doing this? It seems like he's just buzzing around, going, what's going to happen to the guy who kills the king? Yeah, there goes another guy. What's going to happen to this guy? Right? And if you learn like the Malbim, like your kid saying, well, who's this plishti? You know, who's cursing out Hashem? Yes. Anyway, perhaps why he did this is because what's going to happen to Lamed Aleph? Vayishmu hadvar masher diber David. People began to hear what David was saying. David already is making a little tumult in the Jewish camp. David keeps saying, who is this plishti already that's cursing out Hashem already?
He was trying to strengthen the people.
Well, it seems as if he's hinting, I'll take him on. Like, what's the big deal? Somebody should go do something already. It's a big talker, huh? So what happens? Vayagiru lifnei Shaul. So that Shaul hears about this already. Now remember, David is not a stranger to Shaul. Remember, he's playing an instrument there. And what's his name? One of his confidants who's listed the six virtues of David HaMelech as a Gibor Chayil and all these things had a lot of virtues, David. Wasn't a stama nobody, and Shaul did realize that. So finally, they bring him to David, they bring him to Shaul. Lamed, one second. So that's what the mom says. They heard that they understood from his words that he's got a lot of spirit and he's got the kinas Hashem. Remember, he has the zealot spirit, right? And maybe it's a potential candidate. Maybe it's a potential candidate. Lame Beis. Vayomer David al Shaul. David says to Shaul, he initiates. Al yipol lev adam alav. The heart of men should not fall before this guy. Now that could mean a lot of people. It could be ha'adam, can even be the king, but it could be anybody. Right? Avdechayelech. Your servant will go. Vinilchem eplishazeh. And he'll fight him. I'll fight him. I'll take him on. What's the problem with you guys? I'll take him on. Right? He's saying, it's not, Malvin explains, it's not worthy for the heart of a person to fall from their level because of this guy. Don't lose your emunah because of this guy. I mean, didn't remember, who goes to the battlefield? Right? Go back, you have to remember, which soldiers go to the battlefield? The Kohen gets in front and says, anybody who's afraid does not go to the battlefield. Right? So we've already gone through one, way of this of sifting through one of the sifting processes. Already got rid of the chickens, so this is the brave ones have already come. So it's not fitting that you should lose your levels of emunah over this guy, because even though in terms of strength he has a lot of strength, but he's very weak in terms of the tzura that's inside his heart, right? And a heart, a person's heart is really according to the kind of tzura he has. In other words, he really doesn't have any spiritual strength. And I have a lot of spiritual strength. You know, it's not all in physical strength. There's more. There's that factor that's very undefined. You can't translate it in terms of physical things. It's character, gumption, you know, that kind of stuff. He ain't got that. He's just an overgrown schlub. Strong guy. But anybody who really has a heart can take him on. Lamed Gimel. Vayomer Shaul el David. So Shaul says to David, Lo sucha lo leches el haplishti hazel ilachemo. You can't go and fight this plishti for two reasons. Number one, ki narato, you're a young fellow. Vumish milcham minurav. And he's been a warrior from his youth. The question is how old David is over. It's a big debate, exactly. Some commentaries say at this point he's 28. Which seems to be, could be, not everybody would agree. He could be young, depending on how long you say Shaul reigned, as we talked about before. If you say he only reigned 2 years, then David can be 28. Because David was a king for 40 years, and he died when he was 70. So they can't make him more than 30 when he became king. So 28, the question is he a nar? You're a nar. So you have to understand what he means by a nar. It could be nar in terms of you're not used to fighting wars. You're raw. You're raw and a novice in terms of that. So you will not be able to defeat him. So that's how Shaul is trying to dissuade him. And next week, we'll hear David's argument and how it indeed happens. Okay. Yes.